Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Monday. It is the 12th of February, and very nice to have you with us on this day, the 12th of February. Let me introduce our panel to you. We'll get started and talk about the issues that are making news and that have been making news over the past 3 days while we have been out over the weekend. Hopefully yours was pleasant and you didn't fall on the ice. Okay. Where the hell is Teresa? Oh, there she is.
She's disappeared.
I looked over. She was gone. I don't know where you went. Libby Post is with us. She's our political consultant and apolitical consultant. She comes to us with those credentials, and we thank you very much for being with us. Good morning.
My pleasure.
Teresa Bourgeois is a communications consultant, and good morning.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you.
Nice to be here. And I want to say, when I was last here on Thursday, you were kind enough to play my mother, Monica Bourgeois' music. I got so many nice notes from listeners, so thank you for all of those.
They're a good group, aren't they?
Very contacted nice people. Me. That was very sweet. I'm glad you enjoyed the music,
very
and
nice.
Thanks again for that.
Well, thank you for sharing it with us. Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, group.
Nice to have you here as well. Let us get started and talk about what is happening in our world. And we'll begin with the story that doesn't seem to go away or want to go away. And why? Why? Well, because the president keeps making it more of an issue. But so you'll remember that last week we talked about Rob Porter, who worked in the White House, was General Kelly, the chief of staff's right-hand man. He's dismissed. He resigns as a result of spousal abuse of both of his ex-wives accusing him of spousal abuse.
And girlfriend,
yes. Thank you.
And the pictures that proved it.
Now, the president on Saturday said that people's lives are being shattered and destroyed by a mere allegation. There is no recovery from someone falsely accused. Life and career are gone. Is there no such thing any longer as due process? People's lives shattered and destroyed by a mere allegation, sort of like the birther movement.
Was he referencing the ad he took out against the Central Park Five?
Right. That's right.
Maybe that's what he was referencing?
Maybe. I doubt it.
The president jumped into the controversy over the former aide Rob Porter, who is accused by two former wives of physical and emotional abuse, defending him and offering no denunciation even for the idea of assaulting women. Mr. Trump, who himself has been accused of sexual misconduct, focuses instead on Mr. Porter, saying that he was enduring a, quote, tough time. The president's seeming indifference to claims of abuse infuriated Republicans, who were already confronting a surge of activism from Democratic women driven to protest, raise money, and run for office because of their fervent opposition to Mr. Trump. So this doesn't help anything, does it? And then we go to the larger question of what is the fate, and we talked about this for a little bit on Friday, but what is the fate of John Kelly? Hanging in the balance as the White House weathers this fallout from the spousal abuse scandal, and with Rob Porter, and of course Hope Hicks is in the mix, who was dating Rob Porter. So there is a lot of palace intrigue.
And Alan, there was another guy who left too.
The speechwriter.
The speechwriter who left.
Yes.
What?
Do you want to comment on what I just said?
Well, I said something about it at 7:45. First, I want to say that I was hoping our wonderful Mike was going to find Johnny Cash's song "Hey Porter," and play that. But I don't even know if Mike is listening to me. So okay. So anyway, this business of Kelly's survival is fascinating because nobody's going to survive there. This is a reflection. The organization is a reflection of the disorientation of the president. I mean, you know, this is a guy who I don't think knows his own mind and therefore just sort of acts out this way. And I know I saw Ivanka walking. There was a report that she decided she wanted to say something to her pop, and she walked in the room. Now, remember that Kelly had said in the beginning not even family was going to be allowed in there without, you know, his okay. So there is a continuation of the usual chaotic presidency that we have seen before. As far as the Porter thing, they knew. Come on, Libby, you've said it. Teresa, you've said it. They knew, because he didn't get the FBI clearance, what this guy's problems were.
They knew, and they don't care.
That's right.
This is a group of men, and I'm sure people are going to write in on this, but I've been thinking about this all weekend.
Sure.
This is a group of men who think it's their right to beat up their wives, that it's okay, that women need to submit, as Mike Pence has said, that's part of your marital duty, is to submit. And so,
did he really say that?
Yes, so you take that, and it's all part of that radical Christian right ethos.
I would argue that that in saying submit, he did not mean spousal abuse.
Except, look, guys, I really, all you need to do is connect the dots between the men who think their wives should submit to having sex with them when they want, so sex on demand, to also thinking it's just okay if she doesn't submit, or she acts out, or she said something wrong, that it's okay to abuse their wives. There's a tremendous amount of abuse in these communities, you know. And the other thing that
I wouldn't stop in these communities.
I think there's a tremendous amount of abuse.
But there's also this guy, Timothy Nolan, who's a former Campbell County District Judge in Kentucky and who's chair of Trump's campaign, that just was put in jail for teen trafficking, human trafficking. You know, I mean, this is the kind of folks that Trump is surrounding himself with, because he is as guilty of this as Porter and anybody else.
Well, we know
he's done this.
We know one thing. There have been serious accusations made against this president by an awful lot of women.
And the fact that it's interesting. He says careers are ruined. Well, his hasn't been.
Yes, because he's president of the United States.
Even before that, this has been going on for a very long time.
Yes, because he's a billionaire.
That's right. Well, and now we get to Mulligan.
Teresa.
Yeah. If it's possible to compartmentalize some of these issues, I'd like to try to do that. The issue that I think, as a policy matter for the country, the overriding issue here is security clearance. It amazes me that there's not more attention paid to that. And Alan, I'm glad that you mentioned that. I think the reason Porter had to go in the job that he had is because of he could not get a security clearance. This is the secretary to the president. This is the person who touches every piece of paper that the president sees. And I just don't understand why reporters aren't asking what the president knew, because to me, it is not plausible that the president of the United States would not have known that his own secretary, the person who handles every piece of paper, didn't have a full security clearance. And if he didn't have a full security clearance and he was looking at everything, that was wrong. And, you know, if you only have an interim clearance, there are certain things you then cannot look at. So somebody else has to come in and handle that. So if somebody else is handling that for the last 9 months, however long he's been there, a year, then that means that General Kelly would presumably have said, hey, why can't we get this guy cleared? What's going on? And then should have been told. And then the president should have known why he wasn't cleared. And you put him in a different job until he gets cleared. These guys, with the president who chanted, lock her up, lock her up, lock her up, over mishandling, alleged, which wasn't true, mishandling of classified information, are clearly loosely dealing with clearance questions. And they didn't answer the question on Friday, how many other people in the White House don't have clearance? So and then separately, we have a policy problem in this country where what did he do? We learned in the last few days that when the Trump administration came in, they all but defunded the domestic violence efforts.
Yeah. Teresa, one thing that does occur to me to ask you, and that is it possible that because this guy, the deputy secretary or the secretary, knew so much because of all the mail that he handled about Trump, that Trump was worried about what he knew and what he could say, and therefore had to handle him with kid gloves, which he did.
Well, it's irrelevant.
I don't think so.
No. I mean, it might be true.
Yeah.
But we're talking about the person who gets, you know, there was, Malone, the person who was President Obama's staff secretary was interviewed over the weekend and talking about, you know, every day he got a red envelope, that red envelope that, you know, he had to open it, give it to the president, only the two of them saw it, and then it went to a burn bag. I mean, the person in this position sees everything. Perhaps, you know, the reason they kept him around is because, by all accounts, he was so competent. I think there's another separate issue, too, around domestic violence, and should everybody get fired? I'd love to hear from some of our listeners. One of the things that worries me is this message that's gone out that you don't believe the women. And even though there's a preponderance of evidence here, because that sends a very bad signal to people. But I also worry about the signal that everybody has to get fired, because then I think that, in some cases, would put more women, more spouses, and particularly women at risk.
The whole idea of this...
But he had to get fired.
Yeah, but so the whole idea of this, of the idea of the women, but also it takes away sort of the larger issues, and I don't understand. So when you have the Republicans that are so upset over this and feeling that they are being realizing that this is the least important aspect of this, that they are being threatened at the ballot box, then what does the administration gain by doing this other than covering their own tracks?
Well, I think because the guy in the Oval Office has a problem, and if they call Rob Porter out on this, then what's the conversation about him? But even Jay Johnson, I was shocked at what he said yesterday. They was interviewing him. Now, he was the head of Homeland Security for President Obama, and a good friend of General Kelly's. He says, I'm a good friend of General Kelly's. And what did he say? He said, well, Kelly should have known this was going to be a story and then gotten out ahead of it. That's not the right answer. Kelly should have known the guy didn't have security clearance. Get him out of there. And Kelly should have known that if this guy committed abuse, domestic violence abuse, it's not just because it's a political problem. It's because it's a...
These guys cover for each other. It's just that simple, Teresa. These guys cover for each other, and I understand, going back to what you were saying about the policy arguments and the clearance arguments, but from my perspective, the number one argument here is the fact that women are constantly victimized by men like this, and it happens over and over and over again, and I just don't think we can sweep it under the rug. And what they do is that they cover for one another. This is an old boys network where they
Kellyanne
think it's okay.
Kellyanne Conway was covering for
right,
them, too.
Right, and I consider her to be one of the boys.
I mean, that was, okay? And everybody said, well, the problem is there weren't enough men in the room. Well, Kellyanne Conway's there, Hope Hicks is there.
No, clearly there's
they were covering
too many
for them,
men.
Too. It was disgusting
there's
what she said yesterday.
There's too many men in the room.
Well, definitely
there's
there
too many men in the room, and there aren't women in the room that have any kind of consciousness around these issues.
So what do you do about it? In the sense of right now, where are we in this?
You do what Eric Schneiderman's going to do, and he's trying to really hurt
Weinstein's. We'll talk about that story.
Yes.
But there's also the issue of, the president's tweet on Saturday was somewhat breathtaking, which is saying a lot considering what we should be used to these tweets by now. But it's just surprising to have that be the counter.
And yet again, there's so many issues, policy issues going on. I'm not saying that this is not a story. It is. It's a story. It's a bundle of stories. But governance then doesn't happen. You know, we're not talking about the immigration bill that's going onto the floor today. We're not talking about difficult budget issues.
And you think
we're
that's purposeful?
I think the guy is just such a chaos person that, you know, as you say, well, we can't not talk about these things, but they're very important issues around North Korea, South Korea that happened. Like, I'd love to hear what our listeners say about the not standing up, Vice President Pence, not standing when the athletes came in. You know, not only did he not shake the hand of the sister of the head of North Korea, he didn't stand when the athletes came in.
You know, I've been thinking about this a little bit. When we see a president of the United States who caters to a specific red meat group, right? Mm-hmm. We all know that. We can call them what you want.
Right, but it's the red meat group.
A particular group of people. Then he comes out with a remark that we find so reprehensible about due process. We have to give due process to wife beaters or whatever else. You know, it's hard, by the way, to argue with anybody who says that everybody doesn't deserve due process, right? Am I wrong about that?
Absolutely. But
I just wanted to finish.
But that suggests that there wasn't due process.
I just want to finish my thought, which is the same group he counts on, having gotten him through the presidency to the presidency right now, is the same group of people who are going to believe, as he does, mm-hmm. about the rights of men, frankly, to beat their wives.
That's right.
We're all saying, isn't this terrible? It is terrible that he's saying it. But there is a logic to what he's doing.
Absolutely. Everything he does, every tweet he makes, is as insane as it all looks to people who actually think about these things. Everything he does is throwing red meat to his base so that they become more emboldened to what they do. Look, there were just flyers found up in Saratoga under windshields for the KKK. Right. You know, there are, and these, it's the same groupthink. KKK, beat your wife. Sexual assault is okay sometimes, submit. You know, it's the same thought process. It's the same group of people.
And of course...
But what about McGahn, though?
But wait, there's a logic to it, which is those other people aren't going to vote for me.
That's right. So
I got through this way the first time, and that's going to work for me again.
Except he's losing women now.
We only have 30 seconds.
Okay, he's losing women. The polls are showing that he's losing the women who did vote for him. Some of them, they're starting to get disgusted by his antics and this the whole Me Too thing, because most women have been subjected to some kind of sexual harassment in their lives.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue this discussion. We'll have letters and we'll talk about other stuff. We welcome your thoughts, panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the panel and to our discussion this morning, which went on quite vigorously during the break, I must say. Good morning and welcome. Alan Chartok is here, Teresa Bourgeois and Libby Post. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan has a couple letters in front of him.
I do. I have a couple of letters. One of them is from C. Eric, who writes, he's afraid of women, period.
What does that
that's
mean?
That's not good.
That Trump is afraid of women,
yeah.
Or Pence?
No, I think
Trump.
Oh,
yeah,
I thought
I
Eric
both
was afraid
are.
Of women.
No.
I think they both are afraid of women.
No, my interpretation was Trump is afraid of women.
Yep.
Intimidated by them.
Well, he's had enough wives. One slaps his hand away when he tries to walk down the thing with her.
Right.
There's a point. Okay, so Jim says, why does 45 et al. Keep people around who don't have clearance? Because they're loyal to him personally is his own answer, says Jim. When Al Capone was asked whether he would have underlings who were smart or were loyal, he said loyal.
Yeah, right.
I think it's also possible to have people work for you who are both smart and loyal.
And loyal. Well, but Trump wants the loyal.
But also don't forget that the chief person who is of the largest concern who does not have full security clearance as of this moment is Jared Kushner,
right,
who
right.
is his
exactly
son-in-law.
Right.
So
I think this is the issue that Congress has to go after, is these people don't have security clearance in the White House. That is just dangerous. And remember, you know, lock her up, lock her up, lock her up.
Mm-hmm. All right.
More letters,
yes, of course. And this is from Barbara, who says, come on, let's face it. Spousal abuse does not even factor into security clearance. It is a non-issue to this administration. Well, I don't think it's turning out to be a non-issue.
Well, if her point is that it is a non-issue, then correct. If she's saying it should not be an issue, then I would argue with that, correct?
I'm sorry, I'm backing up here. Maybe it's because it's Monday.
But, sort of circular.
But I don't quite get it. I think we are right, you are right, that it is not an issue until it is an issue. And I think right now it's a big issue for them. They see their numbers, as you said before, Teresa and Libby, going down among women. That's bad. They don't need that.
And it's, and the groundswell of women who are going to be running.
But also, in a normal, whatever that is, in a normal administration, if a report came back from the FBI that said we are not going to give this person clearance because we have found several reports of spousal abuse, there have been restraining orders, there have been so forth, and we're concerned about this, then that gets stopped, right? No, go ahead.
That leaves that person vulnerable to blackmail. If you have that problem hanging over you, then you are vulnerable to blackmail. And that's one of the reasons why you cannot get a security clearance. So this guy, they could have put him in a different job in the administration. By all accounts, he's very, very competent. And you can be, as one of his ex-wives said, you can be very, very competent in your job, but privately, in your private life, behave horribly. Both can be true. They could have put him in a different job that didn't require security clearance, mandated counseling, something of that sort. And I think that wouldn't have caused this uproar. But you cannot have somebody without security clearance that the FBI has said, we cannot clear this person.
Okay, point taken.
You can't have him in that job.
Okay, point taken. We heard you. You're right. I don't think there's any question about it. Nevertheless, there's another implication here, and that is something you said, Teresa, and that is you can't trust, according to the president, you can't trust his own FBI.
Mm-hmm. Stop.
What?
But that's what he says.
Yeah. Look.
Are you suggesting the FBI wasn't truthful in
doing
the clearance?
No. Trump is casting doubts on the veracity of the FBI.
Yeah.
There were police reports and photos. I know. I know you're not.
Can't put words in my mouth. I'm not saying that. I didn't say that. I simply said the Trump argument is I don't have to listen to the FBI.
That's right.
My FBI or my Justice Department about anything anymore.
I find it interesting that the blackmail thing that you just brought up, that people can be blackmailed. That's what they said about gay people in the State Department in the 50s and the 60s.
That's right.
And there's already a men's rights movement. So who knows what will happen, considering that, the kind of tenor in the country right now is that white people are oppressed. So
yeah. Kathy says, I object to using the term spousal abuse. Let's call it what it is. Wife beating, spouse beating, assault. Let's not enable the beating. And that's from Catherine.
I don't know exactly how that enables the beating. It is the abuse of a spouse. So spousal abuse seems to be an appropriate term. And it would be what you were charged with. But go ahead.
Right. I don't understand that at
all. See. Well, what they're saying is when you use a general term, what Catherine is saying, when you use a general term like spousal abuse, it almost puts a patina on it, which is not what it is, which is wife beating or spouse beating.
It's like
or
when
assault.
When men say, well, men get harassed too. Well, that's lovely. It's like maybe 3-5% of all harassment and sexual violence is directed at men.
But though I will say, even if, clearly these people got physically abused, but they also got verbally abused in a way that terrified them. And so that's not beating. But that is incredibly abusive and very, very destructive, too. So, I don't know.
Well, it's all part of a continuum.
Right. Part of spousal abuse.
It's part of abuse.
It can be physical or verbal. It's all bad.
Bob from Albany writes, 2 points. First, why would you think Trump, who doesn't even read his daily briefing, knew anything about who doesn't have full security clearances? And second, if Porter was dismissed for lack of a clearance, then Kushner would have had to go, too.
I think that's part of the problem here. How do you thread that
needle? Well, Porter wasn't the son-in-law.
Right, but also Porter's his primary job is to look at all the paper. It strains credulity. It just doesn't make any common sense that Trump wouldn't have known this. I don't know why reporters are just assuming he didn't know.
By the way, I agree with you. Rocco says, hello, panel. You have to remember MAGA Misogynists are governing America. This has to be stopped. Rocco in Rosendale, New York. Thank you, Rocco. And Chris Porter and the Department of and DJT. DJT is
Donald J. Trump.
Isn't it possible that Trump has to say that lives can be ruined by an accusation because he knows the next one might be aimed at him? Absolutely. I think that's what this is all about, to tell you the truth, because we already know it's not as if the next one might be. Well, the past ones already have been.
Right, right. He's in line.
Thank you, Chris. And then Keith says, good morning, panel. I find it ironic that the same guy that argues due process is under investigation for obstructing justice, like he really cares about the rule of law. Due process only when it fits his twisted narrative. And that's from Keith. Marcia says, will you talk about Rachel Brand's resignation and its implications today? Thank you. Who wants to back us up on that one?
She resigned. She was the number three at the Justice Department. She resigned to take a job with Walmart.
Why did she resign, though?
Right.
Well, I mean, why did the number three, highly credible, very respected number three person at the Justice Department behind Sessions, who's, you know, at threat of losing his job, and Rosenstein?
She's next in line.
To Rosenstein.
So is it
liked by Democrats and Republicans? I found it destabilizing for the government to hear that news.
So is it possible that somebody whispered in her ear what she was going to have to do?
Right, like, which was fire Mueller.
Fire Mueller, fire Rosenstein, or do something that she found to be absolutely reprehensible and knew that the history books would not judge her well or her own ethical standards. And so she said, I'm out of here.
Or that things are going on right now that she just does not want to have her sully her incredibly good reputation.
But we were having this conversation when the whole matter of firing Mueller came up, and that we learned that Trump had looked into this in June of last year to say, okay, well, if Rosenstein doesn't do it, then who would be the next? She would be the next person down the line. So it does stand to reason that she would say, I'm good, thanks.
And how the heck are they going to fill that job?
But then also they'd have to fire Rosenstein, and they'd have to fire all these people
Well,
not all these people. They'd have to fire Rosenstein.
Because Sessions recused himself. So.
Right.
So, look, here's the potential for profiling courage. Profiling courage class B is what she did. I'm going to the Walmart. Profiling courage class A is, let me tell you what's really going on here. It's disgusting.
Well, we don't know that she won't do that once, you know, in the right moment. But what I wonder is, did she leave because of what she foresees might happen and didn't want to be part of it? Or did she leave because of what's already happening that she no longer wants to be part of? I just thought that was a very dangerous red flag, her deciding to leave.
She helped lead the department's effort to extend a law that authorizes the National Security Agency's warrantless surveillance program. In an op-ed in the Washington Post last year, Ms. Brand argued that the law has been valuable and effective in protecting the nation's security, and that law enforcement officers would be at risk without it. Congress voted to extend that law of the FISA amendments last month.
Marcia says, will you talk about... Oh, we did that. Thank you, Marcia.
Thank you, Marcia, for a very good letter.
Your second one here. All right. And then we heard from Brucey. It's hard to deal with this guy because he's done 10,000 awful things instead of one or two. Doing and saying outrageous things works for him. As the jaws all drop, you realize Trump just skedaddled out the exit. GOP would happily impeach a Democratic POTUS for any one of Trump's transgressions, and that's from Brucey. She's right.
Back to your question of earlier, do you think that these weekend tweets were to distract from, say, immigration or the budget that people are, their right wing is upset about or whatever? Or do you think it's just him and he...
I don't know. It really, Teresa, depends on what you think of his capacity for intellectual thought.
Right.
If you think, and one can make the case, that what's really going on here is that he is, is that he's just adult, and that, you know, he fires off stuff at every whim.
Right.
Or, as you have just suggested profoundly, I believe, he knows what he's doing. and does it in order to obscure the real damage he's doing? I don't know the answer.
All I know is, you know, the chaos presidency, it's frightening to me a bit.
Okay, and Amy writes, women at risk, striking someone is assault. It's an actionable thing to do legally, and to hit a person out on the street would trigger an arrest. It's against the law. To let men walk free after assaulting a woman in the home is to let them live above the law. To allow this is to say that women are chattel or property, and that's from Amy in Deerfield.
All right. Thank you for your letters. We welcome yours. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We will continue our conversation, move on to some other topics, and see what else is going on in the world right after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Teresa Bourgeois, and Libby Post. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Siena College has a new poll out today showing that Governor Cuomo's popularity is taking a nosedive. You'll remember that it reached its highest point of a second term in early January, going from that was at 62%, and then now it is at 53% and with 40% negative. And that is the latest numbers from the Siena College poll. Is that concerning, or should be that? Should that be concerning to the governor?
Well, it will be concerning to the governor. I know him well enough to know it will be concerning to the governor. Nevertheless, I've heard the Cuomo say on several occasions, anything over 50% is good. So where he is, I'm sure he'll settle for it. The Libby, of course, will check in with me on this one. But anything, what they've told me over the years is anything over 50% we consider to be good. Now, 53% is still good, but the trajectory is bad. In other words, it's coming down. If you look at the trial, the so-called trial of the century, which everybody's been waiting for and writing about and everything else, it does look like Prococo is in good shape.
Oh, absolutely.
It looks like the
Well, let us talk about and factor in Todd Howe's arrest on Friday.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. That's why it's in good shape.
On Friday.
That's what I'm talking about. So now the prosecutors are arguing they're the ones who arrested him because it turns out that he ran out on a $600 bill and he had promised that he wasn't going to do anything else at the Waldorf and some other things. So they arrest him and they put him in prison garb. And then they argue to the judge, we put him in prison garb, but he should be allowed to show up in court in a business suit,
right?
Because that wouldn't be right to prejudice the jury. Hey, you arrested him. What do you think's going to happen when that goes on? Look, as I said on my morning commentary today, you know what? This is an early Christmas for Joe Prococo.
Absolutely. I think that what Howe has done and everything, how this whole thing has proceeded so far, has undermined the prosecution's case. And I think his arrest pretty much puts a nail in the coffin.
Well,
because why would anybody think he's credible?
Ask what you would do if you were sitting on a jury.
Right. Right.
And you had some, you know, what seemed like legitimate business people as well as Prococo sitting there. You might think, oh, Prococo is not a nice guy. And the governor didn't let him go for no reason whatsoever. And the governor isn't distancing himself from his so-called third brother who Mario loved the most, you know, for no reason. Nevertheless, you need proof to convict. And the way that the stinking system works is everything is for sale.
Go ahead. Well, it's kind of an easy way to throw a trial, though, isn't it?
Yeah, you think. But the thing is that Howe's going to go to jail regardless.
Right.
The only question is for how
long.
Right,
so,
for how long.
And what he just did is going to make it even longer.
The word is cooperate.
Tripped over his own feet, perhaps.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. It's cooperating witness.
Mm-hmm.
And how cooperative you are depends on when they stand up in front of the judge and say, he's been very helpful, therefore you ought to let him in, offer the slap on the hand right now. And when they asked him whether he had, in the trial, they asked him whether he was doing this so that he would have less jail time, something like that. He said,
yeah.
I hope so.
In addition to the...
Oh, go ahead, Teresa.
Separate from the trial, I think that Governor Cuomo, as well as other governors, are going to have some really rough seas around budget issues because of what's happening at the federal level. Mm-hmm. I think that the destabilizing of health care is going to create an incredible economic burden on the states. I think that you see out over the weekend and more today, the president's going to release his budget, which is irrelevant because of the budgets that the Congress just passed. But with the rising deficits, there's the next thing that they're going to work on is deep cuts in Medicaid.
Yeah, yeah. But Teresa, I'm sorry for interrupting, but let me ask you this. Do you really think that in a year of Trump, that the electorate in New York State, which is going to turn out in historic numbers to clobber the president, are going to say, okay, and we're going to make a distinction and elect a Republican? No, the one place where he could face some real danger is if he got a sort of left-center opponent. You know, this is not...
No, I'm not suggesting his re-election is at risk. I was just talking about poll numbers,
in what direction they might go.
I think that they're going to be this infrastructure plan that the president that Trump is going to announce today really just kicks the job task back to the states primarily. There's a little bit of federal money, but it basically says we need to rebuild our infrastructure. States, you pay for it, and you know that's not going to help states like New York.
That's true.
So I just think that adding to the list of woes for the governor, this governor and others, is the budget blowback that they're going to experience because of what's going on at the federal level with the budget.
So Teresa, do you think he cares? I mean, the reason I'm asking that question that way is I think I know something about this governor, and I think I know something about his personality. Watching him over the years, I think what's important to him is winning, and I think right now that guy doesn't think there's a way he can lose. That's what I think.
Let us go to a story that is relatively on the same topic, and that has to do with the New York Attorney General and what his political ambitions are. But meanwhile, over the weekend, he delayed the Weinstein Company sale in a lawsuit. The fire sale of the Weinstein Company hit a snag on Sunday when Eric Schneiderman, New York's Attorney General, filed a lawsuit against the studio and its fraternal founders, alleging that they repeatedly violated state and city laws barring gender discrimination, sexual harassment, sexual abuse, and coercion. The lawsuit filed electronically in state Supreme Court in Manhattan appeared timed to at least delay a sale, which had been expected to be finalized on Sunday. If those financing this get spooked, Mr. Schneiderman's move could ultimately kill the proposed deal, putting the Weinstein Company on an almost certain path to bankruptcy. The issue here is, should the people who were around this that allowed this behavior so long be the ones that get the money, as opposed to the many, 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 many victims of Harvey Weinstein?
Well, AG stands for almost governor. We know that. And we know that that's what Schneiderman wants. I think he thinks he's died and gone to heaven because of the exposure that he has gotten from this lawsuit. He ends up on the front page of the major newspapers in America. And while he has been a presence and sued the president on a number of occasions, nothing like this has come home for him. So I think, you know, from a political standpoint, he's done what he had to do to get ahead, and probably from an ethical standpoint, he's done right.
I think it was the right thing to do. I mean, it's an interesting thing that he's going up against someone who was in the Obama administration, because this woman, Contreras Sweet, who heads up this group, this investor group, worked for Obama and so
Small Business Administration.
Yeah, Small Business Administration. And so it's interesting that he's going up against her and some potential big donors for the future.
Well, Libby, but let me tell you,
he's doing what he needs
Aunt
to do
Ruth,
now.
Let me tell you how my Aunt Ruth, the
would have said
professor of political science and dean at Hunter, would have said. Everybody has to do a tour, T-O-U-R, a tour, in government in order to place themselves further ahead later on.
Right.
So I would not think that because she worked in the Obama administration that she's not going to take a very lucrative position here.
Oh, sure.
Well, the idea was putting together this coalition primarily of women and that the board would be predominantly women and such. However, when you look through the details, as it turns out, as it was reported, that one of the biggest financial backers was, even though Weinstein was gone and his brother was gone from... on paper, Ron Burkle, who's a longtime associate of the Weinsteins, remains a major investor. And so that has raised some real questions about how far removed are they really. Maybe in fact she was trying to do the right thing. I don't know, because it was primarily women-led, but still.
Right. And supposedly women, the victims were going to get something.
Yeah.
They were putting aside a fund.
And that's why she has said, well, why is Schneiderman doing this? Because one of the key things we were doing was setting up a fund, and this keeps the company together and gives us the resources to fund these victims. So who knows what's true here? It's hard. I don't know.
Well, it's interesting. Rose McGowan, who's one of the women who really came out hard about Harvey Weinstein, she was raped by him. Yes.
She said allegedly raped.
Yeah, she found that Burkle's involvement was a bit, quote, profoundly disturbing because he'd become a minority owner.
Right.
Of the company. And yeah, I mean, and the Weinsteins, if the sale goes through as it is, the Weinsteins are going to make money. So, you know, they'll be sitting sort of pretty. The brother will be, because he hasn't been as implicated in all of this.
You
as
don't really think Harvey Weinstein.
You think they're not going to end up with money? I mean,
yeah.
I don't mean
no,
you. I mean, I don't
yeah.
mean that
oh, right.
you directly. You
no,
at all.
He,
I mean,
they are going to end
gonna,
up with money.
Well, it depends
on
it. Also, he's still being charged.
Yes. I mean, he's going to be charged. He's getting divorced. You know, it's like...
Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We will be back with more stories. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us, Alan Chartok, Teresa Bourgeois, and Libby Post. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Let us talk for a moment, if we can, about Nancy Pelosi. There was an article in the New York Times yesterday saying Nancy Pelosi wants to take back the House, but she faces a more urgent test. As Congress barreled toward a government shutdown Thursday evening, Nancy Pelosi, the Californian who had led House Democrats for 15 years, gathered her troops to urge them to vote no on a spending bill that would keep the government open. "We're better when we stick together," one lawmaker recalled her saying as she implored unity around demands that Republican leaders commit to a vote on a measure to protect young immigrants brought to the country illegally as children. But Democrats did not stick together. 73 of them voted for the spending bill, ensuring its passage, despite large-scale Republican defections that would have killed it. Ms. Pelosi now says she wanted it to pass all along. "We had a great bill. We got everything," she said in an interview Friday, adding Republicans gave away the store. The mixed messages from the Democratic leader marked another turn in a political high-wire act that has become one of the longest running in Washington. 77 years old, Ms. Pelosi remains a dominant figure in the Democratic Party, its highest ranking woman in the Capitol, and the only woman ever to rise to House Speaker. She is also a polarizing figure, increasingly even with Democrats. And as the budget vote indicated, she may be losing what once was an iron grip. That from the New York Times. Thoughts, panel?
Well, I think the women should go first.
Well, you know, I think she's done a good job, but I do think there's an issue here, as we find in every political party and everywhere, regardless, that people who have power like power, and they don't want to give it up. And so I wonder if there's any kind of leadership development going on on the Democratic side of the Congress, so that when she does one day step down, it's not Steny Hoyer, it's one of the younger folks. It could be one of the younger women, that would be fine, but it's one of the younger folks. You know, I think she's done a good job. She's, you know, they fundraise on her and make her, as they made Hillary, into the number one enemy of the world and of American values. I'm just hoping that there's a a depth of leadership that can step up when the time comes.
I know one of the things that both you and I talk about, Libby, when we're teaching classes is whether the members of a caucus are on the hook or free to vote their conscience.
Right.
It was important, I think, to her and to everybody else that this thing get done and that they not get settled.
They needed to pass a budget.
Yeah, they did. And they saw what happened when they were seen as obstructionists the last time out. So I don't believe any of this nonsense, and I think it is nonsense, that people are peddling, that it was a rejection of Pelosi. I think she knew what she was doing. If she wanted to really crack the whip, she would have done it. But this way she could show that the leadership that she was showing was correct to the Democratic social left.
Right, she was playing both sides off the middle, which is what a good politician does.
Yeah. On the other hand, one of the things about Pelosi that's been very interesting to me is, you're right, they did make her into the boogie lady or the boogeyman. As a result of that, she's not popular. She's not popular throughout the United States because they've been working on her as they worked on Hillary.
Demonizing her for a long time.
Right.
On the other hand, as I have said many times, when I do the Congressional Corner and I talk to all of those Democratic congressmen as well as to a Republican congressman, we don't have that many in our area, they always say how they love her. Mm-hmm. Always. That she's the reason that they're all kept together and she really knows what she's doing and that they don't want to see any leadership change. And I keep wondering whether or not that's smart. In other words, I don't know that it's smart to, even if she doesn't deserve what she's getting from the Republicans, to have a changeover in which somebody else gets to be there so that the Democrats don't lose.
Well, I don't think doing a changeover now would be good.
No.
Okay, I think it would destabilize the Democrats, and they need to be as stable and together as they humanly can. And I think she takes care of her people.
There's no question about that.
And that's what they want. Yeah. They want to be taken care of. And she was able, and I think this was masterful, 8 hours talking about the Dreamers, making sure that people hear this message, that this is who we do care about. But on the other hand, there was billions and hundreds of billions of dollars put into the budget for social programs, which is also important.
So if she had cracked all of those guys who voted for it over the knuckles, you think they wouldn't have come around? They would have.
Yeah.
Or many of them would have.
She got the vote outcome she wanted.
Yes.
She was able to lock in a budget for 2 years. If you look at the Trump proposed budget last year and the one that's coming out today, it was draconian at best. And so not only 1 year, but 2 years to be part of, you know, this negotiated settlement. And as you say, if she wanted folks to vote the other way, the approach would have been a lot different. I think she threaded this needle beautifully. I think the next task is the immigration bill. We'll see what happens there. But I think this is just a lot of noise in the system. She is, in fact, grooming younger people. In fact, Joe Crowley from New York State is among her, you know, the leadership folks, and Linda Sanchez among her
leadership folks. Well, Joe Crowley's not exactly a spring chicken, is he?
Right. Yeah. No,
right.
But Nidia Velasquez would be a good person.
Well, there are a lot of folks. You know, but even if you listen to her on the House floor the other day, she was naming a range of her members, you know, talking about them. But in any case, I think this is just Republicans demonizing her to try to weaken her.
Well, it's effective.
Out ahead of the immigration fight. This is noise. I looked at that article and said, you know, who planted that and for what?
Yeah, no, it's interesting.
Just trying to demonize her out ahead of the immigration stuff.
Yeah, Teresa, you know, every once in a while you think the Times just doesn't get it right. And I think that you're right.
Well, I think they took the bait.
Yeah.
We have letters.
Okay, thank you, Joe. Hi, panel. Sticking out my neck, says Jill. I've had a problem with the automatic firing of men accused of misconduct for some time now, but I say nothing because it is an unacceptable sentiment. I was told of a woman who admitted to falsely accusing a boss she didn't like of misconduct to get him fired. I have a personal friend who was accused of misconduct to what was later realized to be a terrible misunderstanding. I'm aware of a couple more similar instances. True, maybe these are rare occurrences, but here are at least two men whose lives and or careers were ruined. I wish there was some kind of process so that the guilty men will get their just due and innocent men cleared.
Well, I'm of the belief that's not popular with everyone is that you can't fire everyone. And even if they are guilty in some cases, you know, it's not a fireable offense. It might be demoted. It might be get counseling. It might be whatever. But I think these issues are really, really complicated, and you can't fire everybody. It's just not going to happen.
Rick says, I kindly request you focus and discuss the most important world issue, IDF counterattacking Syria and very possibly triggering World War III.
I think what's going on in Syria is very, very dangerous. And also, I just read a few minutes ago, the other thing that this is to me chilling, but you know this plane crash in Russia?
Right.
Yes.
That one of the persons that was killed was Sergei Melanian, I don't know if I'm saying his name right, a Papadopoulos friend. A friend of Papadopoulos who had emailed Kushner and is said to be behind one of the most salacious claims on the dossier and Trump's involvement with Russia.
Yeah.
A lot going on in the world right now that's really dangerous.
Sure. Every time I see a plane go down in a place like that, I always assume somebody done
something,
it.
Yeah.
Dave says, comments, good morning, panel. Thank you. Why are folks working in such highly sensitive positions without a clearance? How do you know about spousal abuse given the pursuit of security clearances? All reports suggest the administration does not care about women's rights. It's unacceptable and more. But Casey says, good morning, panel. Companies deal with the problems of staff accused of a crime all the time. It's called administrative leave. You put the person on leave while the charges are investigated. You put them in a different job that doesn't require clearance. Also, this White House clearly have a different standard for the worth of women, period. And that's from Casey in Rexford.
Well, police, fire, military, you know, all these areas you have domestic violence issues.
You sure do. Richard says, thank you. Thank you, panel. You're a model for civil debate and discussion. You show us that we do not need to yell or demean each other to get our position across, but rather that we can be respectful and offer well-reasoned opinions. Cheers from Richard. That was very nice.
Thank you, Richard.
Yeah, that's very nice.
Rachel says, oh, no, I'm sorry. Michael says, of Rachel Brand, okay, maybe she left to make money. Her public salary is probably mid-hundreds. She will be the top lawyer at Walmart, probably with a salary in the mid-seven figures or more. That's from Mike. Possible?
It's possible, but she could have left before to make money. Just the timing is chilling to me.
I agree.
Worrisome. It's really worrisome. That bit of news was really worrisome to me.
Susan says of Rachel, Rachel Brand, law firm, just signed on to represent Rick Gates. Other rumor, Trump got Walmart to make her an offer she couldn't refuse. Susan, well, there are always going to be rumors. There are always going to be, well, this could have been the reason. Dear panel, what if the DACA people were white Canadians? The situation would never be where it is. Now it's obvious the whole problem for the GOP is that they are racist. It's obvious from Frank. Malcolm says, lying, cover-ups, and criminality in the White House. I believe our central problem is that we have elected for the fourth time a president through the Electoral College and not the popular vote. To our misfortune, this time we elected a person with a long history of disregard of our laws and abusing other people. He is thoroughly dishonest, and he has surrounded himself in the White House and his cabinet with all the contacts from the criminal elements of our society. Honesty is, quote, out the window. We must find a legal way to get him and his administration out of office. Thank you. And that's from Malcolm, M.D., retired.
Well, on the issue of honesty, today's President Lincoln's birthday, February 12th, and he says no man has a good enough memory to be a successful liar.
Mm. That's a very good point.
Mm-hmm. Happy birthday, Abe.
Yeah. We sure could use him now, couldn't we?
Yeah, that's for sure.
I read a bunch of his quotes last night. Oh. So many of them, we could just do the whole day on how relevant they are today.
Okay, so we heard from Keiko, who said, Trump and the three branches of government. Dear panel, did you catch his tweet about the Dems occupying three branches of government from 2008 to 11? He thinks they are the executive, the Senate, and the House of Representatives. As an immigrant studying for the citizenship test, was not my obligation, but a joy. Being so impressed by the wisdom and vision of our founders, he can't possibly claim to be more patriotic than most of us who take our oath seriously, and that's from Keiko. P.S. I missed the first half hour ago. I apologize if this was already discussed.
I wonder what would happen if Trump had to take the citizenship test, if he could pass it.
He'd pass it.
You think?
Sure.
All right, let's go to other stories and probably our final story of the morning, and that is the infrastructure plan. We talked about it briefly, but let's talk about it in more detail. Donald Trump's big infrastructure plan has a lot of detail on everything, except for how to pay for it. And as Teresa, I believe, mentioned, that a lot of this will go down to the state level. President Trump is poised to unveil a long-awaited plan Monday that aims to stimulate $1.5 trillion in new spending on the country's ailing infrastructure over the coming decade. But many lawyers in both parties say the president isn't providing a viable way to pay for the initiative. A year in the making, the proposal is an attempt to fulfill a marquee campaign promise and would rely heavily on states, localities, and the private sector to cover the cost of new roads, bridges, waterways, and other public works projects. The plan also calls for investing $200 billion in federal money over the coming decade to entice other levels of government and the private sector to raise their spending on infrastructure by more than $1 trillion and hit the administration's goal of $1.5 trillion in new funding over 10 years. It also seeks to dramatically reduce the time required to obtain environmental permits for such projects. Why worry about that? Okay.
Why worry about safety? Again, I think that infrastructure, this is something that should be bipartisan, but you have to have a program that's real, that's paid for, and this isn't a program that's real or paid for. I think this is, what, their fifth or sixth attempt at Infrastructure Week, and he tweets out today, this will be a big week for infrastructure after so stupidly spending $7 trillion in the Middle East. It's now time to start investing in our country. This is a guy who just, you know, passed a huge increase in the military budget and is getting us deeper into the Middle East and deeper into Afghanistan and deeper into North Korea. So it's just,
you know, one of the problems with politicians, and I would count Andrew Cuomo in this group, is they can announce all of these wonderful infrastructure projects, like, you know, the airports and LaGuardia and this and that. But in the back of their minds, they know they're going to have to borrow to do it, and that they won't have to be around here to pay for it.
But clearly we need an infrastructure plan.
Yes, we do.
Clearly we need an infrastructure plan, and it's something that the Republicans and Democrats should be able to agree on. But the problem is that they passed the tax break bill that shifts huge amounts of money to the top 1% and is not paid for. So having done that, and then they passed this budget bill, and then, you know, how are you going to do an infrastructure? Where's the money going to come from to make it real?
Even said that the localities, the states, will have to raise taxes.
Right.
You know, it's just
now. And then will they vote to raise the gas tax, which hasn't been raised in a long, long time? And even the Chamber of Commerce says it's okay to raise the gas tax. It hasn't been raised, what, since the 90s? I can't remember.
Yeah, well,
the
I can
year,
tell you that the cost of a gallon of gas has gone up since Trump has
50
been
cents?
In office. Right. So you've got that, and then you put another 25. It's 13 cents now, so what, do they raise it? Are they going to raise it to 25 or another 25 cents? If it's another 25 cents, that's almost a dollar more for gas.
But some who care about climate change will think that that's not a bad thing.
I get that. I get that. But for those of us who live in our cars and travel a lot, and, you know, it's
You're going to get a letter saying, shame on you, Libby.
Yeah, so
I get them
life
all the time.
Goes on. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that I remember when gas was over close to $4 a gallon, everybody blamed Obama. It's not the president's job to regulate the gas. He doesn't have anything really to do with that. It's the gas companies and the oil companies and Tillerson people and the Koch brothers and people who make money off of this. But it's just going to hurt poor people if they do this.
And then they'll say, well, then if we drill off the coast
off
of the
coast
U.S.,
to,
then that'll
Florida,
keep the price down.
Rick Scott
right,
doesn't
which
want
we
to
don't want them to drill off the coast. And
because we don't want the Democrat to win.
Right.
All right. We're just about out of time. Thanks to everybody for what?
I can't imagine.
We do need a real infrastructure program, though, in this country.
All right.
This program should be 3 hours. I'm just teasing.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, everybody. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We will be back after this.